210.
The bottom line is something's up.
Now, I realize it's fashionable in some circles to believe that no one in government should encourage others to read the Bible. That we're told that we'll violate the constitutional separation of church and state established by the founding fathers in the First Amendment. The First Amendment was not written to protect people and their laws from religious values. It was written to protect those values from government tyranny.
110.
This was in a book for Freemasons. Fictions are necessary to the people, and the truth becomes deadly to those who are not strong enough to contemplate it in all its brilliance. In fact, what can there be in common between the vile multitude and sublime wisdom? The truth must be kept secret, and the masses need a teaching proportional to their imperfect reason.
Broadcasting live from a bunker high atop Mount Hood.
All heading towards a fascist totalitarian state.
It's radio that's delivering the truth.
AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
See, the problem is they don't get to determine what is right and wrong in the process. It's all done by the central government.
And here's Paul Preston and Agenda 21 Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So anyway, welcome aboard. A lot of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. We really do appreciate your listenership. It's a great ship. And we appreciate your relationship with us. Anyway, so we've got a whole bunch of things going on here. We have got Patrick Wood coming up here pretty soon as well, as soon as we can get our crazy Skype thing going on. You know, it's just one of these kind of things, right? Yeah. Just this is what Skype does to us all the time, I might add. We've got, what should we do, the code? Okay, now we got to do code business and all this other good stuff, which is what we're going to do. Anyway, so Patrick Wood's going to be joining us, I think, pretty soon, as soon as Skype sends me the code and we plug it in. Here we go. This is the technocracy thing going on here. Stymied by technocracy. You know, that is something that is... We'll see how that works. We'll plug this code in and see if we can get ourselves. This is what happens to these technology companies, that they oftentimes will put stuff down, put things together, and they don't really tell their customers what they're doing, or it's an impulsive thing. You get this all the time when you're dealing with high technology, real high technology, if you know what I mean. Anyway, we're going to bring Patrick Wood up here very, very shortly so we can talk about his book. Other things that we're talking about, though, we've been talking about the crisis actors, if you will, the crisis acting that has been going on. And it's interesting, the so-called crisis acting. Did I say crisis acting enough? How about crisis acting, you know, which is what we're seeing right now with this guy out of Chicago, Empire, whatever his thing is about. And being Patrick up here in just a short second. So anyway, this the crisis actor, I call him, because he paid two of his own people to assault him and put a noose around his neck. Jesse. I'm not going to tell you the whole story about him. But now he's considered to be a suspect in his own assault. And what was he claiming? That because he was black, he was assaulted by two guys that were wearing masks, because they were wearing MAGA hats. In other words, setting up a bad conversation about the President of the United States. Crisis actor? He's supposed to be a real actor? Well, this is a crisis acting situation, a made-up crime. I mean, is there anything about these people that the reality check is in there? Is there anything there? Anyway. We're bringing up Patrick Wood right now. Patrick Wood is with us. And thank you, Patrick, for being here on Agenda 21 Radio. A little technical glitch is going on. Could you hear us?
I can. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Paul.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been on. We were always having you on the radio show, and all of a sudden we all kind of dropped off and went different directions. The Trump became president and all this stuff. But now you have a new book out. You know, this is, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who do not know, Patrick Wood has been a good friend of Agenda 21 Radio. He's been to several of our and spoke and at several of our Liberty tours, and is quite a force in understanding what is going on around you, what kind of governmental system is being set up. It was Trilaterals out of Washington. What was the year that you wrote that book?
1978-79.
And that was sort of the predecessor to all the evils that we're seeing today, wasn't it?
It really is. And there's a lot of things we did not understand back then. We tried the best we could, and we had it nailed pretty good. But technocracy, discovering historic technocracy, really threw a curveball at us. And it was amazing to discover that the Trilateral Commission's new international economic order really envisioned what we see today with technocracy and sustainable development, green economy, new green deal, stuff like that.
Let's go back to the whole thing about the trilaterals, because you wrote the book in the 70s, and it was a precursor. The Trilateral Commission was made up of several world elitists at the time, wasn't it?
It really was, from North America, Japan, and Europe. And in the United States, in particular, during the Jimmy Carter administration, they virtually hijacked the U.S. executive branch by infiltrating virtually everything at the top level. Both Carter and Mondale were members of the commission, as well as all but one of his cabinet that was appointed. The National Security Advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, was a member of the commission.
Oh, wait a minute. Doesn't he have a daughter?
Yes, he does.
Oh, and where's that daughter today?
Her name is Mika, and she's on television with Morning Joe.
Well, I just wanted to connect the dots for the listeners so they understand that she's part of that trilateral business. But go on, because this is the worldwide governance business.
Well, it really was, and they did the same thing in Europe and in Japan by infiltrating government but it wasn't about politics. This is where people make the mistake. The only reason that they took over or hijacked the Carter administration was to gain access to the largest economic driver on the planet. So they were able to take over the U.S. Trade Representative. There were, you know, all of the economic machinery was in their hands, and they used it to break down not only national sovereignty, but to break down the economic barriers around the world, which they promoted free trade. It's not free at all. There's no such thing. But they lowered all the national tariffs and stuff around the world, got this global economic system cooking, and then they fed it all, lock, stock, and barrel, to the United Nations in 1992 with the Rio de Janeiro conference.
Mm-hmm.
And they fed it to them as Agenda 21. This is where sustainable development came from.
And you know, the thing is, that was in June of 1992, and several stellar people from California, Jerry Brown being one of them, and other people associated with Nancy Pelosi actually were down there in Rio when they signed that accord. It was President Bush who signed it. And in fact, a year before that, in September 11th, 1991, is when George Bush came out with his One World Order speech about the United Nations. And let me remember the date. September 11th, 1991, 10 years to the day of when we were hit at 9/11. I don't know if there's any significance in that, but then they come out with the Rio Accord in 1992, and by October 1992, Nancy Pelosi is introducing ResCon 353, which ties in the Agenda 21 plan to the American governance system.
And that's right. And then of course, Bill Clinton and Al Gore, both of whom were members of the Trilateral Commission as well, they took off with that. And during the 1990s, put the rubber stamp of sustainable development in virtually every community in America. They started it out. It's just an incredible story if you look at it. It's so big that most people just can't get their mind around it.
Right.
But, you know, for all those politicians that were involved back then, and there's videos out there on YouTube that show them, they show their lips moving, and it's been documented 6 ways to Sunday. But for us, for you and I, it's a conspiracy. See, if we talk about it, it's a conspiracy. If they talk about it, hey, this is life.
Right.
It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing they can get away daring to call what we're talking about here today a conspiracy. It's crazy.
Well, you know, it's kind of like all of us being called a conspiracy theorist because we think that maybe there were sinister forces behind the Paradise Fire.
We really don't have to judge motive in this. Honestly, we just have to listen to what they said.
Right.
And they clearly were in support of Agenda 21, and they fully intended to bring it into America lock, stock, and barrel, and they did.
And they have.
And we have it today.
And look, and gee, what could possibly be going wrong with our country today because of it?
It is all because of it. It really is. And I would love to do a study or get a study going with some doctoral candidates somewhere, some conservative doctoral candidates at school to do a research project to answer the question, is the rise in homelessness directly related to the application of 2030 Agenda and Agenda 21 policies in America, in American cities? Because what this has done, it has raised prices everywhere it's gone. It's raised prices through the roof. And it restricts private enterprise and private property so that people get bounced out of the system.
Right. The people are bounced out, which is they're That's displaced. Right. And you see, my experiences, and I went down to Orange County and did some research on the homeless people down there, which was very interesting. And of course, walked along the Santa Ana River there where all that homeless encampment was. And it was even more interesting about the displaced people, but it's middle class people that were being displaced. I mean, I talked to a couple that made over $100,000 and could not manage to get a home or a place to stay in Orange County that was living in a tent.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
right. So, and of course now they've melded it into a displacement of American citizens out of California. That's also part of an Agenda 21 plan, by the way. How they're doing that. It's very sinister, and of course, this is what we've been talking about here. But I want to get into the whole idea of technocracy, because I think this is where people are really not necessarily understanding this. It's quite a history, and in your book, your first book on this, Technocracy Rising, which you published a number of years ago, you explain in detail what is a technocrat.
Well, technocracy was defined at it really got going at Columbia University in 1932. And by 1938, one definition of technocracy appeared in their own magazine, their official magazine called The Technocrat. And it basically was defined as scientific social engineering. In other words, using science to engineer society to control the entire economic system. That is all supply and all demand. And it wasn't going to be a price-based economic system at all. It was to be a resource-based economic system, which is exactly what we have with sustainable development, by the way. It's all about resources.
Right. That's why they want you off the rural land.
That's right. They want the resources. It's a resource grab. The behind the grand scam, this is nothing more than a resource grab on a planetary scale. They're grabbing resources with abandon all over the planet. Even in America here now, our government owns 30% of the landmass of our country.
Which is not supposed to be.
Which is not supposed to be at all. And you say, well, that's going to stop under Trump. Well, it hasn't stopped under Trump. The government just announced a massive new conservation set-aside, just like the other ones. Like Clinton did, and like Bush did, and like Obama did, they're still at it. they're still gobbling up land. And every acre of land that's taken out of private hands in America contributes no tax base to anybody, and it also takes all those resources, the mining resources, the timber, the uranium, the gold, the silver, and any oil, any gas, anything you have in the ground, it takes it out of the hands of private enterprise, locks it up, and that's the wealth of our country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes America, if you will, able to do things, is we had tremendous wealth. It's locking up our wealth when they lock up the resources like that. But they're doing this all over the world, Paul. It's not just here.
Yeah, it gets into the discussion I was having earlier in the show, and I've had it actually over the weeks and so on, but in very subtle ways. But now, of course, it's even bigger that since we've seen the fire in over here, the massive fire in Paradise, and the other fires that were going on that we've been wailing against. We're starting to see the crumbling, if you will, of the infrastructure of the energy system, such as PG&E and Southern California Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric, to the point where they're open discussion with the state of California about taking over PG&E power. And, of course, the next step will be Southern California Edison, and then the next step will be PG&E. And now we hear that they're taking over the insurance companies as well. The state is. So this just matches exactly what you're saying.
Yes, it is.
Getting rid of private enterprise.
Yes. Maybe they'll maybe Newsom will appoint Jerry Brown as the energy czar.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, right. Yeah, or the water czar.
The water czar.
Yeah, yeah. That would be he could be Cal Fire czar.
Which brings to mind, I have a question too, nothing to do with this, but I've noticed that on the news that the High Sierras are having a record snowfall.
Oh, it's massive
this year.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's massive. I used to live up there, as you know. I haven't seen anything like this before. I'm just looking at the numbers, at the huge snowpack that exists up there. Some resorts have even been closed because there was too much snow.
Too much snow, right?
Which I don't ever remember happening. What is this going to do to potentially to the Oroville Dam this spring?
Well, you know, that's we have declared that we're. I was talking about this in the first hour too. We're on officially, and have been for the last several weeks. Oroville Dam watch. We've been watching it, and we've had people snooping around. It's difficult. It's very interesting that you bring it up now. Of course, the elevation of the water behind in the reservoir is rising. And, of course, the snowpack, as you know, really won't hit until June or July. But, you know, and the other part of it, when we have massive flooding, ladies and gentlemen, usually is during clear times in which there's no rain in the foreseeable future. So this melt that's going to start filling up the reservoir, which it's rapidly filling up right now, as high as 68,000 CSF that has been entering and coming in with very little outflow. So they're starting to store up the water. The levees here, the waters have been top to top on the levees. I drove into Sacramento the other day and went and cruised by the levees there and then out over to the Yolo Bypass. All those are filled. All the places around the state, North State, are completely filled. I don't care if you're talking about the bypasses. They're all full all the way to the top of the levee. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a massive, and I the drought is clearly over. And of course, we'll have in 6 months, they'll say, oh, we're going through a drought. You know, there's no drought. And there hasn't been a drought, actually. This has all been contrived, you know, with the geoengineering, and that's all been part of it. But, you know, we haven't had any chemtrails for a good 10 to 12 days here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another thing, too. We're getting, but it's just a very, very cold. It's very cold out, even in the Central Valley, the northern part of the Central Valley where I'm at. It's very, very cold. And, of course, in the mountains, you can see the Sierras up there. And I've called my friends up there, and they said it's just incredible snow level right now. So, yeah,
wow.
we're getting a lot of rain. And, of course, that's a resource that these people want, obviously. Nancy Pelosi in particular, she's the water queen. We all know about that. So, you know, this idea of technocracy, I wanted to get a little bit of history so people understand the nature of this. Right. Because technocracy is a belief system in which science drives government.
That's exactly right. Well, not just government. Government is a necessary evil to technocracy. It never liked government. In fact, back in the 1930s, it wanted to basically dissolve government altogether. They wanted to completely disband Congress. They wanted to get rid of, you know, almost all of the elected mechanism of government in our nation and simply replace them with appointed technocrats to run society as they see fit.
Like they're doing in California with the regional organizations.
That's about it. In a practical sense, that's about it. But technocracy wants to destroy government. It doesn't want to build it up. It doesn't really even want it in place, because government, in our country at least, represents the people. Still, we elect these people to go in there and do stuff, and they go into Congress, whatever. And most often, they throw up a roadblock to what the technocrats want to do because, you know, they stick their nose in it. It doesn't belong there. You got to go through committees. You got to get stuff approved. And the original technocracy movement said, look, we need to just get rid of all that inefficient stuff. Forget elected officials and just let the scientists and engineers run everything in the system, and that we don't need a government. Just run the economy. We'll just run the economy, and we'll do what's best, and you'll see. You know, everything will be fine. You'll get your have your bread and circuses and all that kind of stuff. And government's just a pain in the butt to them. And this is true today, I believe, as well. That you see an incredible push to decentralize government. In fact, if you go back to the 70s and kind of do a historical trail through all of the deregulation efforts that have gone on, all the industries that have been deregulated, as it's called, where government has been removed from the regulation of these entities, and the regulation has been turned over to the industry itself. This is moving power away from government back down, you know, into the hands of the technocrats to take care of the stuff themselves. So you don't need government; just get government out of the way.
So it's really, and when you say technocrats, it's the bureaucracies that we're all seeing here today. The bureaucracies, federal government and the state government, like in California, the bureaucracies. As I was saying, we now have a fifth column. We've got a fifth level of a so-called government. We've got an executive. We've got a legislative. We've got a judiciary. We've got the press, and now we have technocracy. We got the rise of the bureaucrats that are controlling everything.
Well, to show you the radicalness of this whole thing, look at AOC's Green New Deal, which everybody's looking at today.
Yeah.
If you look back through what she's proposed, and it's totally radical. I mean, it's just people look at it, even Democrats look at it, just shake their head.
Yeah,
you can't do this.
But you know, Patrick, to you and I, it's not a surprise what
no,
she's
it's
saying.
Not.
It's absolutely. This is what we've been. This is what we've been saying for years. It's here.
But this is actually AOC is a godsend to us to expose the radicalness of this movement.
Yes, yeah, I believe
it
that.
It is so over the top radical. This is worse than the Bolshevik Revolution was in 1918, in my opinion. There's no blood flowing yet, but it will. If it keeps up, it will eventually. So here you have AOC proposing this Green New Deal, which is pure unadulterated technocracy from the 1930s. It's sustainable development, yes. It's green economy, yes, from the United Nations. But all of these people would like to just get the government out of the way altogether. Just stay out of our face and let us get it done. Let us fix it. And elected people, forget it. We don't need you. A global scholar by the name of Prag Khanna, he's dearly beloved by the global elite all around the world. He's a young guy, professor down at the U School for Public Policy in Singapore, travels extensively, speaks to all the big mucky-muck conferences and stuff. This guy wrote a book 3 years ago called Technocracy in America. And he's a technocrat. And he said exactly this. He said, what America needs to do is convert to a direct technocracy. And we need to get rid of the Senate, for instance, and replace the Senate with an assembly of governors. And we need to turn the Constitution over to the Supreme Court and basically rewrite the Constitution. And we need to get rid of the office of the president, by the way, and have a committee of presidents like they do in China. Mm-hmm. Direct technocracy, he called it. And it basically just sweeps government aside and says, look, let the scientists and engineers just get it done, put everything together, connect everything. You know, science has an answer for everything under the sun. Just let science do its work. And everything will be good. This is direct technocracy. These people are calling for this. A global elite are actually calling for this in America right now, that direct technocracy should replace our constitutional republic. Get rid of government. Goodbye. Go home. We don't need you.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
Well, this is exactly what we're seeing in their attempt to destroy the Senate, in the influence of the Senate. And, of course, Reynolds versus Sims was a precursor to this in the fight to get rid of the little federal model of, as it applies to states. In other words, the Senate and senators, there's two senators for the regions of the state, and their job is to act as protectors of all resources of the state, including the people, but all resources, and to have a say in a bicameral legislature. But, you know, you can dilute that by taking away senators from states. And then what they did is they said, well, we can't really do it from the federal model because everybody believes in it. So they came up with a decision of Reynolds versus Sims by the Warren Court in 1964. And what it meant was we're no longer going to say that the states can follow the federal model. In other words, the little federal model as it applies to states is that there's a state senator assigned to each county. So Reynolds versus Sims destroyed that and said that senators have to be applied not just to counties but to districts now, and they have to be based upon the number of people. So in a sense, what they became is just nothing more than members of a House of Representatives, or the same action as an Assembly or House of Representatives at the state level. So we have senators now in District Number 1 who serves us. One senator serves 12 counties. And, of course, where are the rest of the senators that were serving those 12? Where are the other 11? Well, those senators are assigned to the population base in a district like Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So of 40 senators in California, we have 22 senators just in the L.A. basin itself. They're not representing a county or the territory. And you can see that since there's no representation by these counties and territory, then it's very easy for the urbanized areas to then control what goes on in the rural areas, which is what's happening now. All the resources are being stripped in the rural areas of California and being, you know, bought up by multinationals like China. And, of course, then, you know, burning people out, getting people off the land, which fits right into the stack-and-pack housing notion. So this is all being operational right now in California. But that Senate notion has now been extended. What they're talking about doing out of New York, and there's been several editorials recently in the last several months, is that we should take senators from, let's say, the smaller, lesser-populated states like Nebraska or North Dakota and so on, and redistribute those senators to overpopulated states like California. California should gain 12 more senators, and they'll still maintain the federal model because they'll have one senator in that given state. But still, you see what I'm saying? The shifting to the population of senators is part of that scheme.
It is. It's happening all across our country. Of course, this also can be applied to all other countries that are being converted to sustainable development as well, although they have different governmental systems. The idea is to drive power away from centralized government down the chain, down into the populace itself, where it can be managed by the technocrats that are running the scientific engineering program. And their enemy is centralized power. So you see, for instance, in whether it's in a state like California or in the country at large, you see other entities of government being set up that completely supersede what our national constitutional republic is all about.
Right.
Councils of governments are a perfect example of this. In California, you have ABAG, the Association of Area Governments, that what presides over some 20-odd counties, and I forget what the population, 9 million people or whatever in the Bay Area. And this council of government is a form of regional government that is completely outside the political process. These people can get away with anything they want, and there's no senator, there's not even a governor that can come down and tell them what to do and to override what they're doing. They just do it. And there are 600 councils of government set up, regional government structures set up around the country that are presiding over almost certainly every large city and most small cities in America. Regional government has nothing to do with constitutional government whatsoever. And nobody can tell these people what to do. They're the fixers, if you will. They say, well, we know what to do. We know how to implement all this stuff. And here in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area right now, we have a new initiative starting called Smart Region.
Oh.
They're doing the same thing. That not NGOs and University of Arizona standing up and saying, we're forming a committee to develop policy to be used all across Maricopa County and a few other, a little bit beyond that, to set smart city policy uniformly across the whole region. And they're going to enforce it. There's no elected representative in this at all. They're going to enforce this. They're going to attempt to enforce this across the whole region. Now, here we have 22 cities and 4.2 million people. They don't have a clue what's going on. But there'll be nobody come down. Our governor won't be coming down and telling this committee what to do. They're just gonna do it. They're outside everything. They're outside of everything. This is all made possible by deregulation, by pushing the power away from Washington, pushing it away from the states, and just letting it be local. And they took over local. They hijacked the local, and now they're just doing stuff. And nobody, they're completely unaccountable. They're untouchable.
So the gig is to look like you're centralized, but to be decentralized in reality with these with the Soviet-style governance.
It is. This is exactly what's happened. People around the world, by the way, are watching what's happening here with this new smart region effort. This is the first one that's been done. This is the experiment, the pilot.
Mm-hmm. They always run a beta test in a pilot. They
that's
always
right.
do.
This right. is the pilot. They're watching from all over the world. I caught an article in Italy, of all places. It was translated into English. And the Italian technocrats, whatever, are watching Phoenix, Arizona right now to see what happens with Smart Region, if they can pull it off.
Well, and, you know, the thing is that this is really one of the precise things that's happening in France with the Gilets Jaunes movement, the Yellow Vesters.
Yes.
They're protesting against this.
They are. They don't fully understand what's going on. But one of the little observations about the LFS movement over there is that they have the freeways and the highways and stuff have a lot of cameras on them over
right,
there.
Right, right.
And they went out and broke, I think it was something like 70% of all the cameras on the highways. They went out and busted them. It's just like... okay, but somebody got the picture. They took their anger out on the cameras that are taking pictures of them all the time. You know, it's
right.
like, yeah, forget the surveillance stuff. You're not going to surveil us anymore. So they went out and busted all the cameras.
Well, you know, that's just the whole thing. Is that the Gilets Jaunes movement is pushing back against the global elites in France. And I was watching their demonstration. I think it was, I don't know if it was yesterday. I guess yesterday they had a big demonstration again. I was watching it. And some of the stuff that we're hearing out of their mouths now, that these are the Yellow Vesters, is that they want freedom of speech. They want freedom of the press. They're out there protecting against that. I was listening to one of the interviews on France 24 about the Gilets Jaunes and about what they're trying to do. They're trying to achieve everything that we have in this country by our Bill of Rights, especially the First Amendment.
Exactly.
And
exactly right.
And of course, they're getting labeled. We understand that because we're part of the New California Dillijong business. And the communists, these technocrats, if you will, are labeling people. And of course, if you have a yellow vest on, you are a communist. and we're kind of watching this whole thing play out. They're using some of the communist tactics to relabel people as evil doers, when in fact they're not. They're trying to to of course upset the apple cart, so to speak, with the protesters. It's not working very well, I might add. But that movement is just gaining more and more strength, and it's certainly starting to gain strength here in California, which is interesting.
It is.
So
it is.
And tell us about. We got the science thing down, that the basically it's scientific government. And by the way, there's an article that is out about the FBI to keep entire population of DNA on file, which fits right into what you're talking about.
Absolutely. All of the artificial intelligence programs that have been created, the algos, as they call them, algorithms, they won't work without data. You have to feed them data in order for them to learn and to, you know, to process. No data, it's like having a car in your garage that has no gasoline. It doesn't go anywhere. It just sits there. Well, who wants a car like that? And if you're a technocrat that wrote these programs in the first place, you got to have data, and the more data that you have, the better. So all of these artificial intelligence systems that have grown up in the last 10, 15 years, they're being fed with massive amounts of data from society. It's being collected from society. We knew this a long time ago. You and I talked about, for instance, the NSA and their massive new facility in Utah that was collecting data. They had collecting data down fine. They knew how to collect it. They just didn't know what to do with it. And we said there's going to be advancements in computer technology that will give them the power to analyze this data. And this is exactly what they have today. Now they can analyze it. They just need to feed it in. So you see data being collected nilly-willy all over the country, all over the world, really, but all over America especially. Just there's no end of data that's being generated and collected by these people. And whether it's Amazon or Twitter or Facebook or the government or the NSA or anybody else, everybody's collecting data. We used to say back in the 70s, follow the money, follow the power. And that was pretty good, pretty reliable. Today, we can add a new maxim, follow the data.
The data, yeah.
Follow the power. Watch where the data goes. If you want to know what's going on, follow the data trail, and you'll find out what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good axiom now. And certainly apropos, considering the amount of data collection, it's interesting. But the company that – one of the big companies that they're going to use – for this data collection of DNA is a company called Affymetrix, which is out of Silicon Valley. And their main headquarters is actually in Singapore. They moved out of California because they couldn't handle the expenses. And so they moved their whole thing, which is basically data collection of the entire human genome, to Singapore, actually at the invitation of the Indonesian government. They actually paid them, about $500 million, from what I understand, just to move one operation. So there's a whole bunch of things that have played into this, and that was 10 years ago.
Yes.
So they
should probably we should extend that just a little bit and say, data is power.
Sure.
Whoever has the data has incredible power over the objects of that data. And this is why, even back in 1932, this is why Aldous Huxley, when he wrote Brave New World, predicted a scientific dictatorship. This is exactly where it's going. And the data is the power. The more data they have on us, the more power they have over us.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, we're seeing as part of this scientific dictatorship, really, you know, and it somewhat applies into the fake news business, but they're hearkening back to things like the flat earth. Which was something that comes right out of the time of Gosh, look at the people that were involved with discovering that the Earth was round.
Mm-hmm.
this is hundreds of years old mythology, and they're trying to resurrect it today. I think it's a disinformation for people that to keep people from understanding what true science is all about.
Well, I know. And, you know, if you read Orwell's 1984,
mm-hmm.
you'll understand the value of simply just rewriting reality, rewriting it. They change words around. Love is, love is, hate is love. Peace is, war is peace. Everything was backwards. And they just rewrote the newspapers on a daily basis to make it fit their narrative.
Sound familiar? And
if they wanted to get rid of Paul Preston, Paul Preston he'd still be alive out there somewhere trying to eke out an existence, but Paul Preston would be erased from every government record, from every history book. Nobody could find a trace of Paul Preston had ever lived or ever done anything. You're just somehow out there, but not out there.
Mm-hmm.
This was 1984, and the value of manipulating information, propaganda, is just huge.
Well, we're seeing it play out,
Totally, totally. False information today is the main source of propaganda for this technocracy movement to keep people's eyes on everything else except them.
Right. And you see this, being in the news cycle that we're in, the 24/7, 365 news cycle, which are, they are completely shifting from subject to subject and subject, new drama, this and that. Doesn't matter how revolutionary it is or how unique it is, they're just completely shifting from one topic to the other as a crisis to stay away from the main objects to be looked at, such as what's going on right now at the border.
Exactly.
They don't want you to see that.
No. No. And so the news cycle gets filled up with every other piece of junk to keep your eyes off of that. I have to say, I observe, it's just interesting. I get as many articles, probably half of all the articles I post on Technocracy News come from Europe. Or sometimes from Singapore. Even sometimes from China. But these topics that I post articles on, they're not discussed in the American press at all.
Right.
And so some of them are really important. But the foreign press is in some cases freer than our own press.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know what, it's the same in the we work with foreign press people quite a bit for that reason. We do a lot of one of the first things I check in the morning is what's going on in Europe, so I'll check out there's a place on Drudge where you can pick up the European publications and so on. And I do a cursory look at them. But, when I went to Europe the last time, when I've been to Europe, it is very blatantly obvious they've got a good view and very good reporting on what's going on in the United States. Very good reporting. Where our media here is, as you know, is owned by the majors, these people that are pushing this technocracy. And so they've become nothing more than a disinformation extension of reality. But when you go to Europe or you go outside the nation, United States, the reporting is pretty spot on.
It is. It is. So, all of Washington right now and most of the state governments as well is all about look at me. I've never seen such a gathering of hedonists in my life or narcissists. It's all about look at me, look at me, look at me. And whenever you look at them, and most people do, they are, whenever you look at them, you're not looking at the real problem. Bottom line.
Yeah. Well, there's when you start taking a look at some of the things that are going on, which are just outrageous, and play right into this, Biden was in Munich the other day, and he said America is an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. This is all part and parcel of breaking us down as a country. And decentralizing us, as you say, there's one of the things that we have found this decentralization that's happening, or I see this technocracy as actually a more centralized form of governance, but it's a decentralized, centralized governance, if that makes any sense.
I think we can see the model a little bit in Europe.
Right.
Where you have the EU. The EU is where all the power is.
Right.
But they're not elected. They're appointed.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the whole essence of technocracy right there. And that model, by the way, was impressed by members of the Trilateral Commission since 1973. So the nation states that are there, look at Switzerland, for instance. The people that live in Switzerland, citizens, would say, well, we have a wonderful country. You know, hey, look around. It's a beautiful country. Yes, well, you got a nice country. And they would talk about their political system. But their political system has absolutely no power, no teeth, because it's been usurped by the EU. So their own major politicians may get 5 to 10 minutes per year to address issues at the EU. And then the EU will just do what the heck it wants to do, and Switzerland has to go along with it. So how much power does the Swiss government have? Is it like, does it have the power that it had, say, back in 1970?
Well,
not even close.
See, to me, when you get people together and they're unelected, that is just a huge conglomeration of power in one place. Because the people that really decentralize government, where it rightfully belongs, are the people in the model of the United States, which is, of course, something they can't tolerate. This whole model of the United States is just over the top. You can't have that going on.
No,
you just can't have it.
That's right. So while the people are still fooled that they can have 100% control over their country via their elected representatives, that's absolutely false today. That power has been removed incrementally over a period of time. This, by the way, is why I titled my book, The Hard Road to World Order. You might remember the article of the same name by Richard Gardner back in 1974 and written, published in Foreign Affairs magazine. But he was an early member of the Trilateral Commission. And he said that regarding this new world order, this coming, you know, order that was coming, he said, it will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, but an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault.
Yeah,
I mean, the handwriting was on the wall even back then. It's like, yep, we're going to do the end run. The people will never know that we stole a government. We stole the system, not just the government. We stole a system. We neutered it. It's still there. People still think it's there. They still look to it as if it was the, you know, same thing we had 40 years ago, but it's not. It's been gutted. The power has been shifted elsewhere, and the people are looking at an empty shell.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we have today. And that's exactly what we have in California.
Yes, it is.
The empty shells that exist in city councils. City councils are empty shells. If you take a look at county supervisors, they're empty shells. Mm-hmm. And state legislature, it's empty shells. They have destroyed the two-party system here, and they have a monoparty system. And the monoparty system is really a shell of what it should be. And, of course, they can over-regulate, they can regulate, they can pass laws, they can do anything at will in our current legislative model. But it's destruction of the citizens' ability to vote, of the citizens' power. And a disillusion of that power and that vote, like we've seen with Reynolds versus Sims 1964, and now they're trying to get rid of all the senators in the United States Senate, basically, or divide them up by population, which does nothing more than create a democracy. Democracy, which, of course, you use the terminology technocracy, which is a sister to it. You've got several books out, The Globalization of the Crucible of Global Banking, Trilaterals over Washington, which was... I see you got a republished date of the 17th, May 24th, 2017, Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, and which you've been on our show many times touting this. And now the new book, Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order, you can pick it up on Amazon, and I encourage people to do that. So this, how is this book being received at this point?
So far, quite well. I have to say it hasn't been, quote-unquote, discovered yet. I think that forces are in our power or in our favor right now to be discovered. More and more people are waking up, especially with this new Green Deal stuff that's being spread around. They're asking questions, where on earth did this come from?
Well, you know, think they've blown it with her, quite frankly. I think this is a big mistake to run. I mean, obviously, she's set up and groomed to be doing this. You can tell by her behavior. This takes specialized training for someone her age to be out doing what she's doing right now. And knowledgeable, and of course, there's obviously some backing going on here. There's an infrastructure behind her so she can get out and say the things that she's doing and how she's saying and what she's saying, of course, is important to people like you and I. We could see this. But I think they've overplayed their hand with her coming out like this. I think they think they're losing their grip with Donald Trump.
Well, I think you're right on that, but I'm not sure that this isn't going to end up being a big win for him in the end. Because we've seen this happen before, where these trial balloons are thrown out there to knock the edge off of the shock,
right?
You know, that people have, and everybody's going to say, oh, that's, you know, she's just nuts. She's an exception. She's the anomaly here. That will never happen in 1,000 years. But just from the time that she started this whole thing, it's just been a few weeks now. Look at how many Democrats have lined up behind her to give support to her.
Oh, yeah.
I'm stunned, honestly. I mean, yeah, some Democrats say, oh, it's too radical for us. We can't do that. But then there's been other Democrats who line up behind us and say, yep, that's what we need to do. See, she has desensitized the issue,
gotten
people over the shock factor of it, and it's now like, okay, let's get this done. And the other progressives that are lining up behind her now are seeing it as a way to get and maintain power for themselves. And so they have a political interest, a political stake in it, in a sense. But they also see, if they believe in the United Nations mantra that capitalism and free enterprise need to be completely overthrown in favor of sustainable development, you're going to get behind AOC eventually. Because that's what the United Nations says. They have blatantly said they're going to overturn capitalism and free enterprise.
Right.
And that's what AOC wants to do.
Well, that's
she's going to kill it.
The genesis of that is, of course, the Communist Manifesto of 1848. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the root of the evil. And it's kind of interesting, you know, doing the New California Movement and declaring ourselves independent since the first time since 1861 the state has done this, is that we have learned a lot about the Declaration of Independence. And, of course, the Declaration of Independence, the first one was 1776. And that became the document, the genesis document, for the other 37 countries of the New World. And to stop that, they came up with, guess what, the Communist Manifesto in 1848, because it says it right there. They want to destroy American-style capitalism because, bottom line, the elites in Europe, they had lost their edge. They had lost all their colonies. The Declaration of Independence spread so rapidly. All these countries were declaring independence. In fact, it was instrumental all the way up until 1910 as a document. So they had to combat it with something. So the Communist Manifesto was risen up in 1848 out of Munich.
Mm-hmm.
For Frankfurt. Yeah. So anyway, Patrick, tell us where we can get the book and all that good stuff, because we're going to run out of time here.
You bet. It is available on Amazon, of course. I hate to even admit that in a way, but it is. It's available on Amazon. It just, you can type in Technocracy there, and my books will pop to the top.
Yep.
But it's also available on my website, technocracy.news. And if people want to follow along with a story, the only place on the internet that they have, honestly, anywhere, is technocracy.news. I'm the only person on the planet that has a website.
Well, listen, Patrick.
Critical.
Right. Patrick, thank you for being with us here on the Gen 21 Radio. And ladies and gentlemen, stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We are sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.